Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Monday, August 14th.
Good morning.
We're back from a weekend. Well, it was supposed to be relaxing. Actually, I feel rested, although I didn't stop for 2 seconds.
Yeah.
It was just a very busy weekend for me, and it was fun. Saturday, we broadcast from Manhattan Beach. That was
amazing.
Yeah,
how was that?
That was very cool. You know, a lot of people there. It wasn't crowded. It was just perfect, you know, and they were given samples of restaurants.
Was it good food and drink?
Yeah. Like they'd have sliders and sandwiches.
It was like the ultimate weekend for you. All of your great. You needed was to finish it up with some comedy.
Exactly.
Actually, you should come to my show on Tuesday.
Tuesday
I'm on a show on, I believe, Sunday called Jokes for Jews. And I have I have a complimentary ticket for you.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome. I'll be there. Jokes for Jews.
Jokes for Jews. I was
okay.
Like,
like Jews for Jesus?
I don't know. Well, I have a joke. I'm like, how can you be a Jew for Jesus? That's like being a lesbian for straight people. It just doesn't make sense to me. You know what I mean? I was like, it's just funny. You know, obviously they can deduce from my name. You know, they take a look at me. I might look Jewish to some people, but I haven't been Jewish in years.
Yeah,
I'm not religious at all.
Yeah, you're not delivering the tradition.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's fine. I mean, but you belong to the
I'm
tribe.
Just of course, of course. I got to represent for my home
way,
team.
Know?
You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Like, exactly. I got to represent.
Exactly. You know, so.
But there are some people on the show who just aren't Jewish. And I was like, how did you get... I mean, we will take you.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to go out
well,
searching
maybe
for you.
Well, the audience needs to be Jewish or something, you know.
No, it's but, anyone can come. It's just, yeah, I think it's just funny.
Jewish
you know, like
jokes
they
stuff.
Just put, you know, just put me on there. It's just funny to me, you
yeah,
know?
It sounds funny. And then tomorrow night, where are you performing?
Tomorrow night, I'm at Flappers Burbank, on the Wittiest Women show, which is apparent, like, I guess when they do this festival every year, sometimes they add different shows. And this is a reoccurring one, Wittiest Women. And it's an honor to be put on the show. There's a lot of really great female comedians who are like out there doing really big stuff. So I'm excited to.
Well, congratulations.
Connect
so
with
you're
them.
Part of it. And well, that's next Sunday night.
No, that's.
Oh, that's Thursday.
My date. So. I believe it's Tuesday. Here, I'll just really briefly tell you the dates this weekend.
Yeah,
two more shows coming up. One, you can come see me, Flappers Burbank, main room, 8:15 for Wittiest Women or 8:18 for Jokes for Jews in the Yoohoo Room at Flappers Burbank.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah.
8:15 meaning August 15th, not 8:15.
Right, August 15th, August 18th.
Right,
two more times this week.
Sounds good. Well, you're a busy comedian and we like that.
Yeah.
We both went to the Emerald Exchange this weekend. You went on Saturday, right?
Yeah, it was beautiful weather on Saturday.
It was pretty... I mean, it's like sunny and hot, but it was breezy.
Well,
right?
Exactly. I got there at around 3:30 and, you know, it's the cannabis community. It's such a resilient community. I mean, we have so much still to fight for. I mean, just simply putting on events, like shout out to Jessica who put on the Emerald Exchange. You know, she had to last minute find a new spot for the event, which turned out to be beautiful. I mean, you saw it. It was
nice.
a lot of
dust, but
right.
Okay.
I mean, in a week to be able for her to pull off what she pulled off.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. And I didn't either. And that's why, you know, it just everything, you know, for her to be able to do that and no other community has these, you know, to just simply want to operate in an, you know, and for people to come and share their goods and share their message and whatever it is. And for someone to just be like, I can't have that. I'm going to call the cops. I mean,
right.
It's like, these are things that are real issues that people in the community have to fight for just simply to exist.
Right.
You know?
Right. And you can see all these are like great people, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, business people.
Well, it's the health, it's a health industry for
right.
a lot of people and, they're providing medication and, in various forms or entertainment or whatever it is. I mean, there's all kind. There was painting. There was, you know, music. There was brands. I got some really nice flower from Northern California, and it's all sun grown, organic. I mean, just simply nature.
I know. I was going like crazy, you know? Like a boy in a toy store.
And
you know,
cannabis events. A lot of times, like the Cannabis Cup, High Times and things like that, they're held out in San Bernardino. So it's a different kind of crowd. It's a different community.
And it costs a lot less to go in San Bernardino.
Exactly. So this is just showing, you know, that this is just being able to have a cannabis event in a different part of town where, you know, people who, you know, maybe don't live in San Bernardino and, you know, can go up and participate.
And you know, the thing about it is they made it so not many people will come by pricing it at high. It wasn't crowded, and that was amazing to me. I thought it'd be so crowded,
especially when it's hot and, you know, you're just trying to have a good time, and you're, again, you're in an event where, you know, people are smoking weed, so like you don't want to be around a lot of people. You're already stimulated, you already you know, you want to just have your space,
and it was mellow, like a small village. It was really nice. So, and we hope they'll have a lot more once it
they
becomes
will they're great they're you know, you know. So that was cool.
Yeah. So, yeah. And the coolest thing actually is I met a lot of people there. Mm-hmm. I started talking to everybody, and I went by myself because I couldn't find another pothead to go with me. But I know you don't like when I call that, but that's for my generation, you know?
Yeah, but not,
that,
I mean...
We just call that everybody that liked to smoke
weed. I know,
weed.
But that's just such a negative, it has such a negative...
Really? Okay, well, I didn't realize that. Okay. To me, it's not. To me, it's just funny. You know?
To you, but like how, but some people interpret it as like a pot, it's like calling someone a pothead, you know, it...
So it could be a derogatory.
Some people
thing.
Could, you know, it may. I just think you're so much more than that. You smoke. Yes, people smoke weed. It's a part of their lifestyle, but they are not. It's not all about. Right. For me, I mean, some people it is, and at that point, I think like anything, it becomes unhealthy. Like you know, your whole life shouldn't be surrounded by something, unless of course you're working in the industry and you're making money off of it, and it's, you know, you're healthy with it or whatever. But
I was really impressed with the packaging and the technology and everything that they do. It's just amazing. And
it's going to be just like any, you know, it's just going to be like any other industry. Well, hopefully with regulations and things like that, depending on, you know, what they set in place and what the rules are as far as packaging, like in Nevada, even down to like the marketing specifically, like they can't show models consuming in advertisements. Right. And like, I would hate for that to be taken away here because I'm a cannabis model as well. I do modeling for brands and whatnot.
Yeah.
People like seeing, you know, people who don't normally look like they consume cannabis.
No, I mean, look, I'm totally like for protecting children and stuff, but we also cannot limit everything adults do because of children.
It's
we
not
need
even
to
about
educate.
That. You got to have an adult. It's educate. Just like alcohol. It's like cigarettes. It's like anything else, except those things are harmful and they kill you. And even
and kids are exposed to that all the time.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, it's all about creating a healthy conversation that, you know, you got to start at home. You got to start with education and knowledge, and knowledge is power. And you can't just tell kids not to do something. They're going to get it anyways. You got to teach them.
Yeah, true. So it's all about education and communication. Anything else is just by the wayside. Mm-hmm. A couple of things. Well, you know what? I don't really want to get into all this weekend bullshit. We'll leave it for another day. But
well, we definitely should talk about it.
Yeah, but not today. You know why? Because we have a guest sitting here, and I don't want to keep her waiting any longer. And plus, I mean, it's too long for 2 minutes. You know what I'm saying? So maybe tomorrow. At any rate, we're joined by Ms. Deborah Pratt. Welcome to the show, Deborah. No, I'm asking you to get close to the mic. She's shaking my hand.
Well, thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
I thought it was a nice handshake.
No, it is. But here we only handshake the first time. Then it's all hugs, you know.
It's all hugs.
Or fist bumps.
I like
that.
Or
fist bumps.
Yeah, exactly.
Or fist bumps, yeah. All right, here we go.
You got to pound it, you know. You got to explode it, you know. Exactly.
I know. I like that they do that because people you don't want to shake hands with, you just do that, right?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, I mean, no. It's funny because one time we had a guest on the phone.
Germ-free connection.
Yeah. I had a guest on the phone a few years ago, and she wanted to start a movement against handshaking because she says it's so unhealthy and so this and so that, and she was totally against it. It's like a gross habit to do. And sometimes when you think about it, you know, it's like often if I shake somebody's hand and it's like clammy and stuff or whatever, I won't touch myself until, you know, like my face or anything until I wash my hands.
Oh, man.
Is that pretty bad?
I just yeah. Don't think too much into it.
Why?
It's, I mean
if
humans have survived for thousands upon thousands of years with human contact, and I honestly think it's important to be exposed to bacteria and virus. You got to build up immunity.
Sometimes
to
the energy is really creepy and you don't want to touch.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother story.
But yeah, I mean, you don't know where the hand is. Been though. I mean,
you can say that about anything. You can go to a hotel, you pick up the remote, you turn on the
that's true.
I went to one of the nicest hotels one time, and there was a towel that I was in the bathroom washing my face. I looked down, it was staying with my mom, and there were pubes on a towel.
Oh my god.
And this isn't a nice hotel.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
That's why I hate hotels.
I'm
glad
my poor mother, she had to call down. I was distraught. I mean, can you imagine? You expect, but fuck, what are you gonna do? I lived.
You
here
did
I
live.
Am.
You did live. No, I know, but I'd rather not. Okay, well, whatever.
Always.
I think people. I think people think that are doing weird things with their hands themselves because, like, I just don't think about all the. You know. What
right.
I mean?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But people do, man. At any rate, Deborah, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Of course. So you drove not too far today to be with us.
Midtown.
Yeah, sometimes people have to drive like very far. Like the past couple of weeks, we had people driving in from San Diego and Orange County and all that stuff.
I'm a real Los Angelino.
And Angelino, so you were born here, right?
I was not. But at about 6 years old.
But you are Angelino.
No, yeah, I was born in Chicago.
Oh, really?
But like at 6 years old, I came out here at December. It was December. And so we left, you know, the cold of Chicago and got off, and it was 86 degrees. Mm. And by the end of the trip, I said to my parents, no, just leave me. So my focus for the next 10 years of my life was how to get back to L.A. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, it paid off, right?
It did.
You were focused. You see, that's the thing. If you're focused on something, you're going to achieve it, right?
That's right.
Because
manifestation.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's not just words. It really is because, look, if you spread yourself too thin, how are you going to succeed at anything, you know? But when you become, like, focused, you become an expert, you become driven, you have a map, where are you going, you know? So it's a lot easier, I think, that way. So kudos to you for focusing on what you really wanted. You ended
up
where
you wanted. And it's funny because it comes in all my writing. It's in these books, the Vision Quest book series. It's really about how to manifest future. I mean,
really?
They're futuristic science fiction books.
Yeah.
It's how that we as a collective force can actually manifest a better future if we would get our act together.
I love this quote from Albert Einstein in The Dedication.
Yes,
what
you can read
that?
It.
It says, science and art are the only effective messengers for peace. It's an Albert Einstein quote.
There you go, you see. So, I mean, it's like I put up a meme not too long ago that if Albert Einstein said it, I like it, you know. I go with it.
It's so
like
cool.
It's good. And I wrote no. If Einstein said it, it's good enough for me. You know what I'm saying? So so Deborah, you're an author, and we'll talk about your books and everything because I'm fascinated with the subject matter. Just briefly, you write about, you said, near future, and it's all fiction, of course, but it's a series. So
it's a series of books. Right now it's a 5-part series of books. The first 3 books are out on Amazon, The Atlantean, The Academy, and The Odyssey in the Vision Quest series. And then there are 2 more books so far.
Uh-huh.
But it's Earth in the not-too-distant future. Mm-hmm. We have gone through the great quakes, and Earth has changed. So South America sank, but we domed it, so it's underwater cities. Atlantia rose, and we found that we weren't the first inhabitants of Earth. The Kellians were, and they left us these knowledge orbs. But we started to put our... Oh, and we unified as a planet. There are no more countries. We share information. It's
right.
It's a utopian society versus a dystopian society. However, we put our genetics into a bunch of different creatures, so we have all these alternate species that share our genetics now.
Oh.
And they remember the humanity that we forgot, and they remember the powers that we forgot. So our telekinesis, our ability to manifest, our ability to levitate, the things that people have been known throughout our history to do start to be taught back to us. And then we put our genetics into machines, and they, biologically based machines, become sentient and realize based on who we were and what we've done, the age of man is done. So the books are this journey between our heroes, whether or not they can attain their powers, their natural powers, mm-hmm. before the machines build an army and take us out.
Right. And that's, I think that's a big fear about the machines finally taking over, right? And but it sounds like you've touched on so many different areas that you've got to be very knowledgeable, of course, and you come across as that. But I want to get to the books in a little bit. I want to get some more background.
Oh,
okay?
Sure.
So, but the books, of course, the series is The Vision Quest. And yeah, I mean, I'm fascinated that you have so many books in you. I mean, if I had to tell a story, 5 pages, I'm done, you know? You're like 5 books and going, you know? So there you go. And I wanna find out exactly how all that creativity comes out, okay? So we'll find out. But that's why I want to find out a little bit about your background and stuff. So you came to L.A., and what did you do then? What did you decide you wanted to do?
I was one of those people that had... You know,
yeah, just a little closer to the mic.
I was one of those people that had made up my mind very early that I definitely wanted to live in L.A. And so I was at school. I graduated and told my parents I wanted to go into show business.
Uh-huh.
And my parents, my father was a banker, my mother was a psychologist, and they kind of went, yeah, right. You
know,
and I'm in
get
Chicago.
A real job, right?
Get real, right.
Yeah.
So they said, well, you know what, take a year off and play with it. And I went out and I auditioned for some shows in Chicago and got them. And so I was performing, and my parents had actually never seen me perform. I could sing, I could dance, I was like serious.
Yeah.
And my mother called me and said, and you may remember this, but you probably don't. But Dean Martin had a group of girls called the Gold Diggers.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's before my time,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
And
maybe
so
I was a kid then.
You're a kid.
Yeah.
And so they had like an open audition across the country. And I got chosen.
Oh, wow.
Oh,
and it
cool.
was my ticket to California. I was under contract to NBC. I sang with Dean Martin and
what an
Debbie
honor.
Reynolds and danced with Gene Kelly, and I mean real serious old Hollywood. They were old and kind of going out, but
right. How were you landing these gigs?
I mean, luck,
really?
Talent, yeah.
Did you learn right how place, to act and stuff like that?
I did. I mean, I had no relation. Now that's not true. I went to Webster University, and they have a wonderful conservatory. The St. Louis Conservatory is there. And so I had studied there a little bit, not telling my parents, because I was getting my degree in psychology.
Oh, okay.
But I had really learned that I had kind of a natural love and ability toward it.
Yeah.
And I started writing there as well. I wrote my first play there. And so when I got out here, I was writing songs. I wrote with Lonnie Jordan of War, and I wrote some songs with Chicago. So I had thought I was having this music career, and I was going to sing, and I sang for Clive Davis. And all of a sudden, I realized that's not what I wanted to do. There was this story in me that I just had to tell, which was actually this story.
Really? And already it came to you pretty early on.
Yeah, it came very early
on. And how does a story come to you? I mean, what is this? I never heard of anything like this. And I mean, the whole story or just the idea for it in the beginning?
I think in the beginning it was a story out of frustration. I was looking at the world, and I was also, at the time, had young kids, and I was really tired of the apocalyptic stories that Hollywood was telling.
Right.
And I didn't want my kids to grow up in a world that there was no hope. And I did a TV series called Quantum Leap that I co-created, and I wanted to...
You co-created Quantum Leap.
Yeah, co-exec producer, wrote 25, almost, well, and co-wrote another 15, so 40 episodes.
That's amazing. I mean, I love that show. You
Thank
know?
You
it's
very much.
I love time travel.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And, but it was also one of those shows where you really could live in someone else's shoes. So we could tell stories of race relationships. I wrote story about like civil rights, where Sam had to leap into a black man and experience what that was like, because you can't understand somebody's life unless you live in their shoes.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, was what made the show so successful as it was. I mean, he was a woman in a show that I wrote where it was sexual harassment. He was a black girl in an all-girl singing group. And,
you know, I love it.
And Scott Bakula, bless his heart, and Dean Stockwell as well. I mean, uh-huh. I had the best cast.
They're great, right?
But you could write anything. One week it was action-adventure. The next week it was a romantic comedy. The next week it was...
So you could really play around with it, yeah, and do what you wanted to do. But obviously people started discovering early on you're very talented. I mean, it seems like you got... I mean, was it ever difficult for you to get these gigs? Or from the beginning you were just getting them?
You know, let's put it this way. I don't have a... Every year I get something wonderful.
Right.
I mean, there are huge gaps in my career. I just never stopped creating.
Yeah.
You know, you ask where these ideas come from. I truly believe that the universe puts them out here, and if you are open enough and sensitive enough, you'll pick them up.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's a matter of, Michael Jackson always said, when I get a song from the universe, I have to write it, because if not, I know God will give it to Prince.
So you got to take advantage of it.
So you got to take advantage when it's given to you.
While it's there, wow.
And these are now finding an audience, because it's this comment on what kind of future can we build.
Have you always been interested in science fiction?
Yes.
Ugh, I'm such a nerd for it. I love the X-Files.
Yes.
I love Alien, futuristic.
Twilight Zone.
Any of that stuff.
Yeah.
Because I feel like a lot of, like, for example, like 2001 Space Odyssey, which was made.
Amazing.
So incredible.
Timeless.
I mean, to watch it now and realize the time it was made and the quality of production.
And the vision they
everything,
had too, right?
And the technology in the
film. Stanley Kubrick was
incredible. He's incredible. And you could see like iPads and, I mean, this was in the 70s this movie was made. Like who even thought about, you know? And
well, if you think about Star Trek,
right,
the communicator looked like a flip phone.
Right.
I mean, yeah. And I go back to, and I think this is what inspired me. If you go all the way back to Jules Verne's,
mm-hmm.
Now here's a man coming at the turn of the 20th century, and he's writing about going to the moon and going to the bottom of the sea and going to the center of the earth. And until science fiction writers imagine it,
right,
technology,
it's like almost what comes first,
right?
You know, the chicken or the egg. And it's crazy, right? Because I mean, it really, you can see into the future. I feel like a lot of time I'm like, what's happening being drawn from you know,
I think it's a little bit of both. As a time
maybe it's
traveler,
manifest. Maybe we're manifesting the future.
That's the point, and that's what's in the books. That we have the power to manifest the future that we want.
That we want,
and the fear factor that we are suppressed by, is where our lead character has to deal with fear, anger, revenge, all those emotions that repress us from manifesting a better future, from unifying as a planet, because we're being told you have to be afraid.
Right.
Right.
So it's really up to us.
And it is fear that keeps us from moving forward,
mm-hmm.
right?
It is.
Keeps us fighting and wars and hatred and things like that. I think it always comes down to fear. You know, that's the lowest common denominator there.
Well, yeah. I mean, we don't... So. Humankind, we never do well with fear, most of us, you know what I mean? Like fear of the unknown. Like back in the day when we people were being freaked out by weather phenomenon, they didn't, you know, they thought, like, you know,
it was mad at them. Yes.
So
be interesting to see what happens August 21st when we have this amazing
eclipse
of the moon.
Yeah,
because there is an energy that happens when planets align.
Mercury in retrograde, and
right,
oh my
all
god,
those
there's
kind of things.
Always shit going to
yeah.
Do you really believe that?
Think about it. The Jewish calendar, we go by the moon.
Right.
Versus,
but actually the Jewish is by the sun and the moon.
Well, here, but that's what I'm saying is
okay.
One of the most ancient religions even goes by the sun and the moon
more than all of them, right?
So for me, more than anything else, I read the alignment of the stars and the energy, because it all is connected
to me.
It's
all connected.
And I mean, absolutely. Do I take it as Bible? I don't know, but it does bring comfort to me when I read about the stars and the alignments and kind of understanding what is going on in the outer
Right.
You know, I don't live my life by it, but yeah, it is comfort.
Yeah. Well, cool. Whatever brings you, and you brought the word hope, you know, and I think without hope, there's no reason to live, you know, and that's what people don't understand. You need hope, and you were talking about bringing kids into the world and giving them some hope that things can actually get better.
Get better.
Because, you know, I mean, the way I'm envisioning this, and you're talking about the machines and all that. I mean, I can't help but think we're going to have Terminator or...
We already have that. There are machines being created that are now creating their own languages so that they can communicate with each other.
Right.
I mean, it's already happening.
And the scientists think that if they just put code in there that will tell them to never turn on humans, it's not going to work, man. What's going to happen? So, I mean, so it looks pretty grim. What do you think?
Well, again, I go back to the power of humanity. That we have the capability to be good. And if we find other good people, so there's a collective consciousness that gives us leaps of evolution.
Do you think that religion has a place in the future?
Well, actually, religion is in the books, but what I did with it was I unified it. So there is one religion in the future, and we all believe in a universal God because
I think that's the only way you could have a dystopia, I mean a utopia, is if people were unified by one central belief.
Right. Source energy is God energy.
And that'll never happen.
Well, see?
I mean, but
you
it
can't
could.
Say that.
But here I am in my short lifetime. I don't see it happening. But who knows what the... You know what I mean?
It may take one alien invasion.
That's what I'm saying. I want it so bad. I crave it. I'm like, please,
to bring
them here so we can all just collectively be like, yeah, that's them. This is us. We are, you know.
We need
yeah.
that tribal right? mentality.
But I'm like, I come from a place that I'm like, I would love if aliens came. You know, I would, if they were good aliens.
But
I would
look, you're thinking about this utopian stuff, and that's the thing, is that all we need is all we need is a couple of atomic warheads to create chaos in this planet, and you can think about utopia all you want, but we won't even get to a chance at it. You know what I'm saying? Because we're so close to the brink of disaster. I mean, do you know how many warheads the U.S. has? 6,800 atomic warheads.
Ridiculous.
That's pretty, you know, that's pretty scary stuff. I mean,
you don't need a lot.
Exactly.
You don't need that many to do incredible damage. Now, think about it a different way.
Okay.
Think about it the fact that we live in more than three dimensions. We live in more than four dimensions. So let's say a fifth dimension exists that is attainable by just shifting your vibrations to a positive area so that all this negativity and all this other horrible stuff that's happening, literally, maybe we can split a dimension and maybe we can live above it so that we're not touched or affected by it. And we live in a dimension where there's enough food, there's enough water, we don't need money. We need to start thinking bigger than what we're trapped
it's
by.
It's so hard to do that with people who are bound by traditional
They're
thinking.
They're bound by material objects.
Or traditional
but
thinking.
Not only
or
the,
like, you know what I mean? Like
it's the materialism it's, that holds us.
Well, I mean, for instance, I would consider myself agnostic or atheist, kind of a blend between the two. But I believe in science more than anything. That's what speaks to me. That's what makes sense to me. So I just think that people who are attached to a certain mindset, material, whatever form it comes, material or just like the traditional, like it has to be this way. People who take the Bible literally, like, you know, this is what it is and there's no other, you know, it's hard to move past that way of thinking for people because that's what makes sense to them, you know.
I agree, but if you think about the Bible and Jesus Christ who performed miracles, and there are people who have performed miracles, the Edgar Cayce's of the world, Buddha, I mean, it's in a lot of religions where Christ said, do as I do.
Right.
So what if we have the ability to walk on water? What if we have the ability to change water into wine, to manifest food from nothing, and we just forgot how to do it? So in the books, I actually talk about the knowings. And I've had a lot of reviews on the books where people said, oh, my God, this is a pathway to a different level of information, a different level of thinking.
Right.
That if we can attain it,
right.
we can do it. Because if you start manifesting something from nothing, people are going to listen to you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I think it has to reach a collective consciousness.
Right. Mm-hmm. So you probably need a miracle that everybody would like start believing, because otherwise I can't see getting everybody to believe the same thing. It's just never going to happen.
It would take...
You know,
we'll
I mean, the Bible talks about it.
But all the Bibles talk
about aliens and stuff.
They define it in different ways. Mm-hmm. But they talk about major events happening that bring us together. We are at
a shift.
We are at our best when things are at their worst. Mm-hmm. And that will.
Right.
Well, it's true. I mean, sadly, when 9/11 happened, that brought a lot of people. I mean, there was that sense of it didn't matter what party you were on, it didn't matter what your skin color looked like, there was
right.
We just want to be okay, we just want to, you know, this isn't, and we've moved away from that. You know, we've been jaded by so much that's happened since 9/11. It's sadly going to take something like that, I feel like, to bring us back to that point. I mean, yeah. I don't know.
You see, the thing is, my problem with all this stuff is one main thing, and that is that you can't. You're always going to have these people that want to
control.
No, or break everything. You know, yes, control.
It's control,
but
greed,
they want to break down everything that we build. You know, I mean, look at ISIS for example. They physically try to destroy cultures.
Look at white supremacists.
You know? Yeah, they try to destroy culture. You know, you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. They try to destroy
it's terrorism.
Culture.
But, plain and simple.
But the thing is
but the thing that they have in common is they are stuck in this mindset of thinking
fear.
Something is taking something away from them.
Yep.
Right.
That isn't it's a fake fear.
Yep.
Fear is an illusion in general. It's an illusion.
Inside of you, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So
it's again coming together and realizing there's enough. There's enough water. There's enough food. If we work together, if we shared, you don't have to hoard.
Right.
Don't do that.
Right.
Help your neighbor. Be a part of this world. Don't look at somebody as a threat to you. If we can start thinking that way, we can start changing it, which is one of the reasons I wrote the books to appeal to a young reader, although it's picked up a huge spiritual audience.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Now, so so I'd like you to explain to me, for example, because I think this is like, aren't you talking about changing actual human nature as far as how we respond to things? I mean, fear is there for a reason. It's for fight or flight, you know. How will you take that out of the people? You know what I'm saying? Do you understand my question?
I do understand your question.
So
I think it's a real question in the sense that we're so ingrained by it. I was watching a show talking about North Korea and the fact that since the Korean War, it has been inundated and ingrained in the North Korean people that we are literally mm-hmm. monsters mm-hmm. that will right. suck their brains out.
If you want to watch an interesting documentary about North Korea, Vice on HBO does a really fantastic in a half hour. It's just the Vice News. It's five seasons. It's in the first season, episode 10. And what it is they followed Dennis Rodman and a couple Globetrotters to North Korea. It's a couple years ago
right.
when, you know, when Dennis Rodman and Kim Jong-un are, you know, BFF. And to go over, and I think that's where they got a lot of their information from, that movie with James Franco and Seth Rogen, when they went over and made fun of North Korea. And it makes sense now where they got a lot of their information. It's just so interesting to see what happens when you have a dictator in today's modern world, how you can still, with all the technology and whatever, control a country of people. And
you're right,
even from such a young age, breed them into thinking that Americans are bad with all the propaganda. But it was so interesting because they, in one day, you'll see Kim Jong-un, fuck Americans. And the next day, he's bringing Americans over, you know, to play a basketball game in front of Koreans. And he brings these people, the Dennis Rodman and the Globetrotters, around North Korea and gives them this like tour of like, here's our country.
Right.
Look at how amazing it is. And the creepiest part was he brings them to a college university. And they bring them into this room of all these Korean kids in front of computers. And the thing is none of them are clicking on anything. None of them are typing. None of them are working on anything.
No, right.
It's just a facade.
Right.
It's a fake. See, it's almost like it's a Truman Show. That's what they compared it to.
Yeah.
And one guy had Google pulled up onto his desktop.
Yeah.
And that ironically was the one person that they were allowed to interview. And you go over and you see, you know, one of them being like, hey, you know, what is it like? And he's like, oh, it's great. And I'm just working on this paper. You know, he's not even typing anything. The image doesn't even click anywhere. You can see him moving his mouse back and forth, you know, yeah. not really knowing what to do. And he was frightened with his, you know, he just wanted to answer right. He didn't want to get in trouble.
Right.
So, education is a huge part of it. And knowing
like, they don't have access to it. They don't even, they're not allowed to have. And that's what I'm saying is like, you know, that could happen anywhere.
Yeah. That's why I absolutely wish that everyone in America could write a love letter to everyone in, I know it sounds corny, it's out of, you know, what was the 42nd Street movie?
Where they Miracle wrote, on 34th Street?
Right, where they, thank you, Miracle on 34th Street, where they write the letters to Santa Claus and it saves the day. If we as Americans could just write a letter and send it to, you know, somebody's got a list of the people living there. Now, the fact is they don't read English. And
exactly. And then there's an abuse of power where Kim Jong-un would just be like, these people are lying to you. And right. there's and then they take them to, I mean, these people are don't even get food. They're malnourished. And they take them to this grocery store. And there's all of this American food. And there's no one else shopping there but the Globetrotters and Dennis Rodman. They go up to play with a credit card. And the woman was like, I've never even, doesn't even know what that is.
Right, right.
We don't take that here.
No,
it's
absolutely.
Bizarre. It's bizarre.
For those of you just joining us, we're talking to Deborah Pratt, and she wrote a series of books called The Vision Quest, and we'll talk. But what we're really talking about, what the books are about, right?
Have you thought about, has this been made into a movie?
No,
well,
I'm
it better be.
Book four is coming out, which is called Panzia, which really kind of takes us under the sea and what that world is like here.
I could totally see this being like bigger than Twilight. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, it's
like, like almost like a... like that next thing that people are like, oh my God, you know.
Yeah,
and
I really hope so
over.
In the sense that
there's
that
no reason why not. You know,
yeah,
there's no
absolutely.
Reason why not.
I mean, I'm writing films now. I
right.
have a couple of films that are out that I direct that I'm looking to direct, and we're putting together a historical piece about an amazing 18th century Renaissance man named Chevalier de Saint-Georges, who most people don't know about, but. He was so cool. He was the finest swordsman of his time. He was a virtuoso violinist. He was court composer to Louis XVI. He was tutor to Marie Antoinette. And he was head of the Royal Opera. And he was black.
Love it.
And he influenced Haydn and Mozart with his music. And the most fascinating thing is, so I'm doing copious research, which these books took as well. And I had to translate everything from French to really find out about him. And I find out that Marie Antoinette was so enamored by his music, she'd sneak out of the palace to go hear him play.
Oh, wow.
So the story is written from the point of view of the Queen of France and the love of his music and the freedom that it gave her and the fact that she could not be with this man. So like Amadeus and Salieri, she erased him from history, which is why you don't know who he is today.
Yeah, oh, wow.
Yeah, very cool. So you have many worlds in that mind of yours.
I do.
But we're sitting here and we're saying why a utopian world can't happen, but your books are about, well, it can happen, right? So you're taking the thinking into, well, what if, right? What if things could be different?
What would we do?
Right. So, I mean, do you in the books describe like how we can get people to all agree like this?
A little bit in the sense that, again, there's a collective consciousness that there are no more countries. We have a triumvirate of rulers that are made up of these alternate species and humans. But we also have, and there are corporations, and the corporations have helped us through this great transition where time starts again. But people, there's a law on the books that says all information is accessible to all people. We're on what I call the Vibernet versus the internet.
Right.
So everything is free information. It's shifted. So nobody can hoard anything in that respect.
Right, right.
The idea that we communicate with each other and the idea that suddenly you are awakening to the fact that, and you know that you do it. You think of somebody and the phone rings.
Mm-hmm.
That's psychic energy.
Mm-hmm. Or a song comes on. Or it's something, exactly. If someone, that happens with, it's happened my whole life, and my mom and I share that too.
Right.
But like a song, no, or someone that you haven't spoken to in a while.
Exactly.
That have no purpose of ever, you know, like, and they just pop up the next day. That happens to me all the time.
But those are the kind of things that we need to expect from ourselves.
And or how about when you think you're like, oh my God, this better, you know, like something bad is going to happen, and you got to get it, and it happens, and you're like, fuck, I shouldn't have
and
manifested
some days
that.
You know
what I mean?
Something's coming around
right,
the corner.
You can feel it.
So we need to awaken those senses in ourselves and trust them.
Right.
And the ability to see that there's somebody's a bad guy.
Yeah.
You read auras all the time. Mm-hmm. They may not be blue or green or yellow or orange, but you can read somebody's energy. And what we have to do is start to open ourselves up to that. And once our energies start to collect and connect, we're going to be able to, again, ascend. It's time to evolve as a species.
Right.
And so that's what I hope the books inspire people to do, and to start this kind of conversation.
Right.
Where you say, oh, wow, yeah, I was just thinking about you and the phone rang. Thank you for calling.
So let me ask you this. In your world, is there anything negative there at all? Anything?
Yeah, the machines are going to kill us.
Oh, okay. So that's where things turn
around.
And we
messed up a little bit in when we started creating species. So I'll give you a little piece of the storyline. So we went to the moon and we brought back a virus. And the virus killed our domestic pets. And we missed them so much. That's when we started genetically splicing, you know, non-domestic animals with insects, and started to create all these bizarre creatures.
Oh my God.
And some of them went kind of crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And became dangerous. So in this world that we live in, there are now dangerous creatures that
were man-made.
That were man-made that we have to now coexist with.
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a Star Wars world to me, with all different species meeting in different places, you know what I mean?
Again, I think those energies go out.
Yeah, yeah. But you know what? I mean, the thing is, it takes a lot of imagination for all this, and I salute you for this. Like I said, for me, 5 minutes, I'm done writing my story, and it
and
takes
that,
you...
But that's
your
why
story
you're
so
on the
deep.
Radio, Sam.
Exactly. That's
you're
why,
talking every day.
You see, and I love to write, but I can't commit to such big commitment. I mean, to me, it's like insurmountable, but you have produced and been part of like big projects like this, TV shows, movies, whatever, you know, so you know how to handle this stuff, right? I mean, you already
I've had to learn
with this.
You know, it's what's the tipping point? 10,000 hours to learn how to do something right. I mean,
oh,
you're
wow.
For me to get on a radio show and do this every day,
right,
would be a challenge to just have that kind of flow of information come through me.
That's true. So each one of us is different with their own talents.
Because you choose that.
Right, exactly.
I would think that if you sat down and really dedicated your time, energy, and were passionate about a subject
matter. That's true.
It would just flow.
It would flow.
Yeah, would flow,
which is
right?
The same thing. If I needed to get on a radio and talk every day to everybody to say, come on, let's do this, I would think I could rap enough to get good at it.
Yeah, that's true.
And I invited people, if you go to thevisionquest.com, remember the. I invited people to come in and write and create characters of themselves in this world. What would your life be like in this world? Would you be a machine? Would you be a splicer? Would you be human? Where would you live? And if you look in the beginnings of the books, there's a map of what the world looked like.
Oh, yeah, I love that. It's like Game of Thrones.
And if you look in the back of the book, there's a language that the Kellyans left us. And,
really?
Yeah. And
this would be such a cool movie.
God.
Or on Netflix, you know, like a show that, like
no,
a Game
I'm
of Thrones
to evolve
or something,
it.
You know?
I want it to be an interactive game, because here's the trick. If I could do what I wanted to do, I would build this world online and invite you to come in and say, what would you do to make the world a better place?
Like a video, like a video game,
Second
but almost
City.
Right, exactly.
In the sense that, okay, I want to build a building here, and this is where I want to live.
Or like
and
the Sims. Sims, right?
So, yeah. I mean, I think that's what we need to start doing collectively, to start bringing this energy together, because maybe if enough of us start thinking about it, we will figure out the answer together.
Yes. Absolutely. I mean, look,
it's almost like a simulation, right? Because if you can do it as like a video game, and everyone has different versions, and you can see in a game like how people
there's
would
like
react.
There's like 11
or whatever.
Video games. If I wanted to pull games out of here, when you get to the Odyssey and the fourth book especially, Laser plays in an augmented reality game for his life.
Oh wow!
So it's so real, and the connections to his nervous system is so real. is called Phaser Blades, that if you believe what's happening to you, you can die.
Really?
So
that's crazy.
So it's really where we're going. It's right. Interesting now when I kind of imagine this years ago.
Right.
Phaser Blades didn't really exist, but you know what? I just went to the
virtual reality
yeah. event, and we're getting there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the virtual reality right now and augmented reality, and then you have artificial intelligence, but they also have AGI, which is artificial general intelligence, which is like, how do you make everything one, you know? And it's like this unbelievable thing. So, but at any rate, I mean, you've tackled so much in your books, and I can understand why you need so many different or so many books in the series to address all these different areas. I mean, you invented the language, for crying out loud, right? I mean, how do you do that, you know?
I'm telling you, it's a gift from the universe.
People it really is.
Well, you have the strangest mind.
I know. It's like
that's
she's
such
from
a compliment.
It really is.
You've
got to be from
that
another
means you
planet.
Have so, that okay. means you have something. Right. You have something different.
I'll take it.
You know, right. I would rather be told that than... that I'm pretty, you know, because that lasts forever. You have such a unique
thank
gift,
you
know.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big contribution, and that's why I know that someone's going to help me make it very, very big, because you need to be big with this. You know, this is big. You
this
know what I'm
big.
Saying? I mean, it's...
this is big.
But you're saying, so... You're saying originally it's aimed at younger readers?
No, I thought
it's
it would
more
be.
More like the go ahead.
I thought it was going to be aimed at younger readers. I thought it was going to be the Twilight, the
Hunger Games,
all that kind of stuff when I started writing it. But once I got into the empowerment and spirituality, it lifted past Star Wars into... I mean, it just kept evolving in a way that I had to trust. And I've got a lot of readers that if you go to Amazon and type in the Vision Quest, Deborah Pratt, my name,
okay.
People have said, you know, this has touched me spiritually. This has made me think in a different way. This has made me look at life in a different way. So there's something else. And again, I don't take credit. I give it to the universe.
Wow.
That's unbelievable. Did the work.
You were the medium.
I was the medium that it came through. But the message is out there for all of us, and we need to start opening ourselves to it.
Yeah. So you already have, five books, right?
And three of them are out.
Three are out.
And Zia is coming out this fall, and maybe book five.
Okay, so tell people which ones they are.
So The Atlantean is book one.
Okay.
And that kind of introduces us to... our main characters and the world that we live in, our villain. Book two, he has to get off Atlantia, which is this risen continent, and he goes to Mu, which is off the coast of Japan, is another risen continent. And these are all based in, you know, the histories of our world that said these other places exist. Atlantis existed. Mu existed. There's another one off India, Diwala, that existed. That these continents actually sunk. But because of the global things that are happening in our world, they rose back up, and on them we found these other lives. But a university was made out of it. So he goes to this university with his friends to learn to access the visionistic arts, which are your empowerments.
Right.
And he goes to learn to be a Polisha, which is a fighter pilot, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he, too, is struggling between... machines, man and machines, and man and self-empowerment.
Yeah. This needs to be made into not like a mini-series maybe, or a regular series.
Series of movies.
A series of movies. Anything. This is like a piece of work. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's quite a bit of effort that I can tell you put into this. Everything, the design of the books... everything about him is amazing to me. And you're a fascinating human being. You know, I mean, the thing is, maybe you're not a human being. I don't know. Maybe if you're from another planet. From another planet, I mean. That's not
and
what I mean.
I found out when I did my DNA. I did one of those DNA things. And it says at the very bottom, 1% Jewish. And I went, is that a nationality? Is that? How did they figure that out? I got it covered. That's awesome. There I've got go. And I've got awesome. I've got Desiree.
Yes.
And Black Chateau, and she's helping me promote the books and get them out there, and
that's awesome.
And I've got great people like you who get it. Feel it in talking to you.
Right. And I'm going to definitely read this, and I got to admit, I always felt I can't get into those worlds like Hunger Games and Twilight and all that. But the bottom line is that this is like, or what's the latest one that was the woman writer, also a series of three? The most recent ones after the Hunger Games. Do you remember the movies, the books, also for young readers?
Trying to think of what else.
Yeah, you got to know. I mean, anyway, it doesn't matter. We'll talk about it. Yes,
oh,
Divergent. Thank you. Yes,
but these were so dystopian. Again,
right? Exactly.
I want my kids to think we got it together.
And that's
we're
what
unified
I'm saying.
As
you figured
planet.
It out. You know, I
we
mean,
figured it out.
And the thing is, at least I think you're taking us into places of thought that we may not necessarily go to every day. You know, we may not be thinking, well, actually, this would make sense. This would make sense, and so forth. You know. But Deborah Pratt, we're totally out of time. Tell people how they can find you, contact you.
You can come to thevisionquest.com. You can come to deborahmpratt.com. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Facebook. I'm on, what's the other one?
Instagram.
And if you go to Amazon and Kindle and type in The Vision Quest, Deborah Pratt, put my name, and that's the biblical spelling, Deborah Pratt. Or just type in The Atlantean, Atlantian. That's the first book. And it'll kind of guide you around into the story. And come play in this world and come visit me on the websites. Blog what your life would be like in this world. So when I physically created in a you know, virtual reality space, you can come live here with me, and we can build the future together, because that's what's got to happen.
Maybe bring like a, what they call a massive multiplayer game online, right?
It's all in the books.
Like a totally, yeah, like a whole world, you know?
It's all in the books.
Wow, you're awesome.
Thank you so much.
Well, Deborah, thank you so much for joining us. You're welcome back anytime.
Thank you.
We'll talk about this. I'm definitely going to, like I said, it was never my genre before, but I'm going to jump into this one. I love science fiction and all that stuff, but new worlds, new language was kind of beyond me. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that we're doing a book giveaway. So if you go to thevisionquest.com, is that the best place?
The Twitter page, the Facebook page.
Twitter and Facebook.
The top on both of them.
Cool.
You
can get a free book. We're doing a digital download. So if you sign up and come join me, we're doing some choosing people. And if you're around next Saturday, I'm at the Leimert Park Book Fair.
Amazing.
Talking about Afrofuturism from Olivia Butler to Octavia Butler to...
I'd love that.
Yeah.
Well, we gotta go.
Okay. So come visit me.
Yeah.
And buy the Vision Quest books.
There's another show coming right after us, folks.
Thank
Answers
you so very much, guys. You're awesome.
Of course, Deborah. Thank you again, Rachel. Thank you.
Always.
And of course, thank you to all the listeners. And we'll see you all tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.